If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
It's 1890, and the citizens of Boston are beginning to go missing in the fog. Police are confused, the public is frightened, and the city is on the edge of hysteria. It's up to the mysterious Smith, inventor and adventurer, to figure out what's going on with the help of his assistant, April Malone. We'll have to face off against a secret society, corrupt policemen, and a mad psychologist hell-bent on dissecting Smith in order to solve the mystery of what's going on and to save the city from a more sinister threat. It's The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist, a fast-paced 45,000-word tale of science adventure, written by Andrew Main. And it's available to you for only $1 on the Amazon Kindle store. Download it on your Kindle, iPad, or any major phone, including iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, and Windows 7. Either way, don't miss The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist, available for only $1.
Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, ghouls and goblins, witches and warlocks, welcome to the Weird Things podcast. Today, we are joined by Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hey, everybody, we're back again.
Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Huzzah, Americans, and screw
and
you.
More importantly, the invisible wife herself, Bonnie Brushwood.
Hello.
And this is by popular demand. It should be pointed out.
Oh, very much. I had friends I hadn't heard from in a long time, and the only text I would get was, she was great. When are you going to have her back on the show?
Aww. It's like,
thanks. Thanks a lot. Yep.
But your long-lost friend was Bonnie.
Yeah. Right. You didn't know that. Oh. I feel a little self-conscious because I kind of insinuate. I feel like hanging out with Brian tonight. He's going to do real weird things. So.
Oh, this is awesome.
Maybe I'll do
weird things. Because we have some
too.
Questions for you.
Uh-oh. Me?
This is our post-Christmas episode. And what Christmas traditions do you guys follow?
We like trees.
We do. I was like talking the Christmas to Bonnie. Tree. Yeah, Christmas tree. The lights outside.
The giving of presents.
Giving of presents.
Stockings.
Yeah, we
Wait,
did
this
the church
is during
thing
Christmas
too.
Or after Christmas?
On Christmas Day, we do these things.
Yes.
Okay. So you open your presents on Christmas Day.
Yeah. Yeah, we open the pickle present the night before.
Do you guys know about the pickle present?
Nope. But we're real excited to hear about it, Brian.
That's where a member of the family
present?
Drops trowel. And...
the pickle present.
No, seriously, this is a German tradition,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. They have like a little ornament that is green pickle, and it camouflages nicely with the green tree. So you hide it on the tree, and whoever finds it first gets to open a present.
Who won
first
this year?
Or I don't know. The Germans open their presents on Christmas Eve. So
wait, all their presents?
No.
Yes.
The Germans open their presents on time.
Exactly. Oh, Penny did.
Penelope yeah. did.
She didn't really, you know. Joseph
so you
was like what?
You like yeah. these kind of traditions? Would you be interested in celebrating some other Christmas traditions that perhaps haven't gotten as much attention lately?
Sure, you name it. We'll do it. Go.
Well, I did a little research, and, you know, it seems like over the years, as everybody knows, Christmas was basically a pagan holiday that got evolved into a Christian holiday, but so much of the ceremony, it's about everything around it, has absolutely nothing to do that you would find in the Bible, but we just sort of accept, like a tree, you know, it's like, you know, have a tree and put ornaments on it, you know. Thus right. it says, you know,
and lo, our
Matthew,
Lord
you know,
and
it's
Savior,
not in there. Okay,
baby
so,
Jesus,
stockings, you know, so Jesus's feet don't go cold. Okay,
right.
That's fine. It's cool. We adopt these holidays, we change them, and sometimes we forget these things. Like 12 days of Christmas. What are the 12 days of Christmas?
I really don't understand that. I want to know.
They're the 12. Days of Christmas. I literally have nothing on this.
Yeah, I don't understand the whole song, the whole countdown.
Apparently, and this was new to me, the 12 days of Christmas are the 12 days between Christmas and the new year.
Oh.
Are you kidding me? How is this not a known thing?
Well, so, wait,
those
what's
are
the problem
those
what
the
I
12
just
days
said?
When people write list articles on blogs?
12 days between Christmas and New Year.
But that's December 25th through January 1st. That didn't work at all. That's 6 days of Christmas.
It's because like that old calendar that we used to have, there apparently were 12 days between Christmas and New Year's.
Okay.
Huh. All right. So that's where like the 12 days of Christmas. I used to think it was the 12 days leading up to, and I think that's what we all assumed, but that was actually was the 12 days following. You think about it, a long time ago, like Christmas is a very Northern European holiday where winter, it's cold, you're scared. And, you know, we forget about some of the other Christmas time and winter characters. Now we have Santa Claus.
Yes.
We have Frosty.
All right, now keep in mind, Santa Claus, of course, is based on St. Nicholas, a real guy who used to give gifts.
Yeah, and probably an amalgamation of other things, too. There's as these stories tend to be, we tend to combine. What about the Wild Huntsman?
You mean the one from Snow White and the Huntsman?
No, this would be the Wild Huntsman.
Like the fairy?
Is that the one who's running for president?
Yeah, that's John Huntsman.
Yes.
The Wild Huntsman. So, hey, everybody, I'm going crazy. Why don't you vote for me in Iowa?
So when you would be all cuddled up in your blankets and the winds would be howling out there, you know, like your long George R. R. Martin winters.
Yes.
There was a story you would tell and there was a thing that people were afraid of, and that was the Wild Huntsman, who would ride down to the winds of the 12 nights after Christmas. His hunt used to precede the Christmas of Shakespeare, but old superstitions cling to old dates. Students of demonology identify this fearful hunter with Odin, the Jove of German and Norse mythology. Apparently, after Christianity spread, Odin became a bad guy, and he would cloud blue cloak and a gleaming kirtle, and he suggests that he was coming from the heavens. He rode a fierce 8-legged steed and was attended by 2 wolves. And it was followed by witches and all sorts of other creatures. And if you're out in the forest and you heard a sound, that would be the huntsman coming for you.
Holy cow. So wait. And this only happened at Christmas time?
The 12 days of Christmas were a period of time which you had to worry about him.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
The witches would be riding all sorts of animals following behind them. And they would go people down.
Unsaid in that jaunty song is all that stuff is happening. The 5 golden rings, the turtle doves and whatnot. But the subtext to that is because outside you're gonna get murdered by Odin.
Right. No.
Very angry Odin.
Stay inside.
Well, so, if you guys listen to the Dresden Files, read the books, but I listen to books, and he's a character in one of the files. So
wait. Odin is?
Well, the huntsman.
The turtle doves.
It's all like they got fairies and all this stuff, and he alters mythology to suit his books.
Yeah, but is the huntsman Odin in the books? Or is this the first time you've heard about the huntsman being Odin?
No, I think he has Odin show up separately.
I know he shows up in Marvel Comics Thor.
Yeah. You know what? I have to re-listen to him.
All right.
All right.
But I think they show up in girly
you've heard
books.
That before.
Yeah.
Well, get back in that.
Okay. What does that mean?
What? Tra-la-la?
Yeah.
It means like hooray for Christmas in Arabic.
That means go away, Odin. You're not welcome here.
Justin?
That's adorable.
Go away, Odin. Please don't kill us.
Tra-la-la was a doo-wop band fronted by Bowser.
Wrong on all counts. You know,
aww.
I'm going to tell you, none of your made-up explanations are anywhere as cool as the real one.
Oh.
All right, go on.
Tra-la-la-la-la, and again, this was just a little bit of research here. Apparently, because we say these things, we don't know what they mean. Like, ring around the rosies. We talk about that, and that's actually like, oh, you're sick, you're going to die, okay?
Yeah.
Tra-la-la-la, apparently, it was like a Norse saying. And it involved the period around Christmas where what you would do is not what you would do is the elves. That was the time when the elves would push all the trolls into the sea.
Oh.
Wait, the elves, the one fictional being would push the other fictional being into the death pool.
Duh, yeah. Brian. How amazing is it that it's tro-lo-lo-lo, and it sounds like tro-lo-lo-lo-lo, which has, like, on the back end come to mean trolls on the internet.
Yeah.
Wait. Yeah.
Tro-lo-lo-lo-lo-lo-lo-lo. Maybe they're like, opposites, and, like, tro-lo-lo-lo-lo-lo is nothing but, like, a compliment. Like, if we want to make you feel good about yourself, tro-lo-lo-lo-lo-lo-lo-lo-lo-lo, you look nice today.
Tra-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la, your legs look fat.
Tra-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la, I like your smile.
Tra-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la, you are fired from your job.
So what would be the equivalent of pushing internet trolls into the internet sea, I guess?
It's called, hey, everybody, time for an SFW show. So the that word, because I came across a word which I'd never heard before. It was hogmanay.
Okay?
Hogmanay is an old word for the last day of the year, so New Year's Eve. And so there's different interpretations of what it means. And so again, there's different disagreement on what it's supposed to mean, but they say it's the Scots and Gaelic version, not Gaelic, but some other version of that. Variants of the word are to be found in the common Norse root. It suggests the full formula. Hagananea, trolalale, hogman I, trolale, invokes the hillmen or elves and banishes the trolls into the sea. So
I say this is a tradition we need to bring back on the internet.
Isn't it an awesome idea?
It really is.
Next time somebody shouts too gay, then you just go tralala la 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 la.
No, like you physically push their IP.
I have the practical application.
All right, go on.
New Year's Day, you just make the info box is whatever Andrew just said, and you disable all YouTube comments, and you push the trolls into the sea.
Yes.
Because they're mean on YouTube.
Now you're ready for the really coolest part about the 12 Days of Christmas?
I thought the coolest part was the 12 drummers drumming.
No. And what a horrible gift, by the way. I'm going to bring you drumming.
They're like, hey, I wonder what it is. Oh, that's kind of cute. I'm going to have lunch. Kind of tired now. I'm going to take a nap.
I think the Lord's a Leaping's kind of weird, but go ahead.
What I love about that, but that song, though, like, oh, you know, the drummer boy song, like, you know, he's like, hey, what did you bring for the Lord? Oh, he's playing the drum. Oh, you brought him a drum set. Oh, no, he doesn't get to keep the drum set.
It's just the guy. And by the way, what a stoner hippie thing to do. Like, like, hey, man, what are you getting the Lord Jesus? Oh, is that today? Oh, man, I got my drum. How about you check out this drum thing?
Wait.
You only get the beat. You don't get the drum.
Yeah. And then Mary's like, I just got Jesus to sleep. Oh, my God. What are you doing? <Ba-rum-ba-ba-ba>.
Baby Jesus.
I'm such a bummer.
And never invited
that kid out of here.
So this comes from a New York Times article from 1906. I'm a little bit behind in my research in my news.
That's good.
Feed
you,
here.
You are aware that it's the year 1907 now, right?
Yes. So this is okay. As if we don't have, okay, we have Odin going mad, angry Odin roaming through the woods with witches riding all sorts of creatures and
murdering. By the way, mad, angry Odin would be a great rap album title.
Then we have elves pushing the trolls off into the sea.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. And when we still tra la 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 la, everybody's singing this. What are we singing? Oh, and the elves push the trolls into the sea.
Yes.
Okay. Do you know what the 12 nights after Christmas are really good for hunting?
Troll corpse fishing.
Wrong.
Wait.
Virgins.
Yeah, wrong. That's what I'm Christmas. Talking about.
No.
Go on.
12 days after Christmas. Remember that 12 days between Christmas and New Year's.
Okay.
It's very, very good time to hunt.
To hunt.
Werewolves.
Oh.
What?
The 12 nights after Christmas were also the favorite hunting time for werewolves. These are not Odin's attendant wolves gone mad and bad. No. dear reader, for the belief in them has been potent in widely separated parts of the world. In the 15th century, a council of eminent theologians convened by the Emperor Sigismund gravely decided that werewolves were a reality and the common people shuddered at them till a much later date.
Okay, now here's the thing. I understand in olden times that you get terrified by, you know, by things that may be, and that, you know, you hear sounds in the night and you ascribe them to various supernatural beings. But, like, that crap changes when you're hunting down anything with four legs and fur because it's after Christmas and someone just decided that's a good werewolf hunting time.
Well, Jesus, Peter Brushwood. How do you go there immediately?
No,
there's werewolves killing people.
No, I'm telling you. I guarantee you there are...
You punched my dog because you thought it was a werewolf.
There are Italians who have died as a result of this this idea. And this is a terrible idea.
Well, to reference pop culture fiction, they say that you either join the hunt or you are hunted. So, like, there was this.
Okay. Oh, hold on, real quick. I'm gonna pull back.
Twilight reference.
Yeah, this is when you say to reference pop culture.
I'm talking about the Dresden Files.
That's code. Tell me it's Dresden Files. Don't tell me it's. Don't. I know you've read the Twilight novels.
I have. The books are better. Well, I never watched the movies because everybody made fun of them so intensely. I couldn't bring myself to watch them. And the posters are so over the top. I was just like,
which is it from? Stop stalling, Bob.
Yeah, no. Lay it out. Is it Dresden Files or Twilight? What are you referencing?
Dresden Files.
Okay. All right. Well, you are not banished.
Okay.
If I may interject some scientific fact into what a werewolf is.
Yeah, no, scientific fact. Dresden Files, better than Twilight.
Yeah, so Emperor Sigismund, when he got these people together, like, hey, listen, werewolves are real. And you want to know what brought about that conversation? You know what? Like, they're waiting for the policy change. Like, listen, we're having a problem with our treasury. Some of the Germanic tribes are getting a little bit unruly. You know, the Ottomans, what are we going to do about that? And Emperor Sigismund's like, let's talk about werewolves, guys.
I can totally see that.
Do you think they're a big non-sequitur?
That's on the docket, okay? Can we talk about what's important here? Werewolves.
You got all these, like,
Cardinal Augustine, go.
You know, it's cold. We left our families, you know, because, like, in the Huntsman, Odin is out there roaming the woods, and we were going to go watch them push the trolls into the water, and you're coming here to talk to us about what? Werewolves, guys. Werewolves.
And you know he's got somebody outside just in case, like, one of the cardinals is like, there's no such thing as werewolves. We have serious business. What?
He's like, guys, we got to pass this legislation now. Come on, did you hear that out there?
They're going crazy. Like, they're doing, like, the Monster Mash, which is a song I just wrote.
Or was it, you know, he's an emperor, and he's just not a very good a leader, and he's sitting in this meeting, and he has nothing to contribute, and they want to make fun of him, like, well, Emperor, what do you have to say about the current issues? And he's like, well, what are we going to do about, and he sees a dog in the corner. The werewolf problem.
Right.
And they're all afraid of him. Nobody wants to be like, the werewolf problem. They're like,
what?
Oh, yeah, the werewolf problem.
The Monster Mash, which I just made up.
So apparently a werewolf was supposed to be a wicked man, hungry for blood and slaughter, much like Amtrekker. And who assumed by the black art the form of a beast. He combined the beast's ferocity and the veracity with human intelligence, ingenuity in getting what he wanted.
An aversion to buying furniture.
So.
There you have it.
Next time you're at IKEA, keep a lookout.
You'll be safe from the Brett, the Roundsville Amtrekker werewolf problem.
Some beings are landing. Some beings from beyond the stars. Are they here to be our friends, or are they here to crush us into oblivion? We don't know, but they bring synthesizers and theremins, and they get very probey when you don't buy their music. Check out and buy Identity 4's brand new single, From Stars, Friend,
on iTunes, Amazon, and at identity4.bandcamp.com. It's a song that's playing right now. Pretty awesome, isn't it? I think it is. Aw, yeah.
Listen, look, I don't want to rock your world here, but longtime listeners of the Weird Things podcast know that the way things go is that Andrew comes up with a scenario that involves, you know, a horrifying decision, usually involving either shooting or eating my own family. And Bonnie, yeah, enjoying the power of being a returning guest. And because the first time you come on, you're a guest, you got to be courteous. Apparently the second time you get to come on the Weird Things podcast, that's when you get to take charge. And then
just
Bonnie
freestyle
came,
rap.
Where is that written?
It's written in the Weird Things.
It was right
code.
Under the werewolf
it's,
rule.
It's under the werewolf.
It's under the tra la 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 la.
It's under the tra la la Geneva Convention. All right. So Bonnie thought that turnabout.
I have a list of things in front of me here.
I'm sure you do. But you know who also came with a list? My wife, Bonnie.
Santa Claus.
That's right.
Bonnie.
That's
Bonnie,
right.
Bonnie put together a list. Like I suggested, I was like, hey, how about we challenge Andrew with the scenario? And Bonnie was like, I'm on
no.
it.
No.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. It has begun. As the prophecy has foretold.
This is not the way it works.
Yes. No, apparently today it is. Okay. So. Bonnie immediately turns to murder.
Of course.
I have a whole story. I'm going to do it in Jermaine style.
Oh, I'm sorry. No,
hey,
okay.
Brian, shut your filthy pink mouth.
Okay. All right.
So this is.
All right. All right, so
I'm
going
to do my best Andrew Maine.
Okay. Bonnie's going to do her Andrew Maine impersonation. First, put on a hat and eat some cereal.
Crunch. Crunch.
Well, that's cereal. I'm like, do I make some bodily noise I'm unaware of?
Old Crunchy Mane.
All right, so what do you got?
And actually, the previous stories kind of lend themselves.
Okay, all right. So you got to start by saying gentlemen.
Gentlemen. So let's imagine, Andrew. Let's imagine that you have this
What
girlfriend.
If I don't imagine? How are you going to handle that?
Don't step on it. Go for the rock.
You're banished from the podcast.
You're banished from the podcast.
I'm imagining.
Okay. So imagine you have this girlfriend, which I'm sure you imagine a lot.
That werewolf just found that joke hilarious.
Is that the werewolf you just pulled?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead. So, imagine.
And, you know, we had Christmas recently, and she's saying, you know, Andrew, what I really want for Christmas is a card that says, I love you, but it's not really from you. It's actually from somebody else.
Okay, hold on. Before we go any further, this fake Andrew girlfriend voice is my favorite thing on the planet.
All right, so far, Andrew, how are you feeling about this? This is cool.
Okay, so Olivia Wilde comes to me and she says, I want a card that says I love you.
Right.
And she's, because I'm feeling kind of down about cowboys and aliens.
Right.
So like, you're cool with all this so far, right?
No, I'm not cool with this, but all right. Okay. I'll entertain her.
So this,
you have little commitment issues, but it's fine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but to make you feel better, this, it's not from you, but it's not addressed to her either.
So you don't even have to commit.
Yeah.
You don't have to write down I love you or nothing.
This is actually a correspondence between two other people.
All right. So, okay, explain this to me. It's not like she wants me to go Hugh Jackman to sign this card, I love you.
Right.
She comes to me. What am I supposed to do?
You're supposed to pay $124 for a bear holding a sign that says, I love you, and it's a little card.
What's wrong with that? Why would you not give her?
It's adorable.
It's Olivia Wilde.
Wait, is this for her?
This is for her.
Well, she wants it.
She wants it. She wants to own this. And that's what
she wants it bad.
Yeah, she wants it bad.
So she wants me to, she's like, you know, I've always had this thing that I'd like where I just, it's just, when I was a little girl, I thought this would be really neat.
Yeah.
And since it turned out that guy from Saved by the Bell probably doesn't like girls, is a card with a bear saying, I love you.
Yeah, exactly. Except it's not from the guy from Saved by Bells.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not from yeah. Bellman.
Yeah, it's her. This was her other dream. I'm like, all right. So you want me to get you a card? And I like this girl.
And yes.
Okay.
And this card happens to be signed by Richard Ramirez.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Well, there are a lot of Richard Ramirez's.
Yeah.
The one down who details your car. Yeah. And then the one
that made all those.
Are we talking the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez?
Yeah.
The one that. Maybe we're talking about the one that made all those Spy Kids movies.
All right. So. I'm dating a freak. That part's not a stretch.
Right.
She says to me, what I really want is I want you to get me a Christmas card that says, I love you. And I'm like, all right. And they're like, no, not from you.
Right.
Hold on. Murder serving time in California.
Yes.
Fake Andrew girlfriend voice. Can you specifically spell out which card you want?
Well, it's listed on Supernaut. Which is apparently a site where you can get authenticated materials from serial killers.
Oh my God!
So she's like, Andrew, I just would really like this bear car that says "I love you" from Supernaut.
I like the vaguely southern lilt in your voice.
Oh, it's amazing. Fake Andrew girlfriend voice should never not be on the show. And by the way, this is not a weird thing, as you might think. Sometimes, you know, like there's some like relationships where like you just completely do gift exchanges with Think Geek, you know, wish list. This is pretty much like that, but a different site.
Yeah, yeah. And they do have a wish cart.
Murderbilia.
Yeah, murder.
Is it super not, right?
It's a thing. It's totally a thing. And apparently women are like huge into murder.
Wait, whoa. Women in general?
Women, well, they tend to read a lot about murder more. And then psychologists have been studying this.
Chicks, murder's a hilarious game that usually involves romance.
Well, you know, they're trying to figure that out. They're like, why would people
But don't
do this?
Start off a first date by talking about serial killers. Never
yes.
works.
Yes, doesn't
Never
work.
Works.
But
I don't know, but maybe that's how you started dating fake Andrew girlfriend voice.
Maybe. So
they in an article today on by Slate Magazine, Murderbilia in the Market in True Crime Collectibles. And they referenced some things that have, you know, that have were on sale. And one of them was an early 20th century child rapist, Albert Fish's autograph went for $30,000.
What the?
I know. Somebody spent $30,000 to own this.
It was one of the stars
object of like evil.
Teller's Play Dead.
Right. Yeah.
No, it is. Yeah. The ghost of Albert Fish.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Wow. That suddenly got way dark.
Hmm.
Man, imagine like the message boards on those sites are probably just all lonely 30 to 40 something women and Rob Zombie.
Right.
But and it's like Bonnie printed out like a dossier of all this crap. She got like the clown paintings by John Wayne Gacy.
And those go for
Danny Rowling.
Let's see, what did those go for? Oh, about $4,000.
Okay, now this is disturbing because tell me that this guy doesn't look like yours truly.
Well, we can't really see.
That does.
Well,
not.
I mean, you're giving yourself a lot of credit on the abs there.
Yeah,
Patty.
Exactly. You need to do a little more crunches. So.
Okay. Okay.
So great when you actively play on Brian's body dysmorphia issue.
I think Brian needs to see a neurologist.
Right.
Dude, he's got the spiky hair and everything. And the abs I wish I had.
So these are paintings. So basically this site deals in all sorts of stuff. Like
a lot of letters
a greeting
signatures.
Card that they wrote. you know, paintings they've done, letters, stuff like that.
Yeah, articles from the, like chips from a person's house. Like, this is authentic pieces of Bundy's house, or
you know. I found something pretty cool. I'll show you in a sec. I'll bring up when we do our picks that relates to this. But in answer to your question, that does bring up a very interesting thing, because you're in a situation where, like, if you like this person, all of a sudden you see this really dark, dark side. And right. Part of me is thinking, you know what? I might be able to get away with a lot worse behavior now.
Right. But then what if at that point...
That bar has been set so low.
You know.
What if at that point she just starts picking out her own outfits and she's like... starts putting them in plastic zipper cases, and she's like, well, I got to keep this one because it's going to be worth something someday.
Oh, my gosh, like playing up the angle of resales.
Yeah, well, so she's and she just starts, like taking your clothes and, like, you know, finding little, like, things out of your wallet you find missing. Right. And she's just like, oh, I just want to have them for safekeeping.
Well,
I just got to get it clear who's going to be the murderer here.
Well, I you know, I don't think people that are actually collecting this stuff are interested in murder actually happening, outside of the fact that they have a high association with this thought that evil is contagious. Like, one idea is that
is real.
Some people know, like, if you own the sweater of Hitler and you wear it, maybe you somehow get,
you're like, I'm tacky just like Hitler. Yes. Well, 60 years ago.
You've heard the studies about, I think we've talked about that, about, like, would you wear the serial killer sweater for $20 or $50?
Yes, exactly. That's one of the things that they reference.
There is also that one time, like, where, like, you get a serial killer's hand and then you start killing people.
Well, I mean, you're talking about that movie.
That was a
right?
documentary that I saw.
No, it was a movie you saw. Okay, but think about this.
It was on Nat Geo.
There's this great bizarre magician named Christian Shellman, who bizarre magic, outside of the way I misrepresent it, is basically like you tell this bizarre ghost story and then you have a magical element to the reveal of it.
And, I was at Walmart.
Yes, exactly. And so, like, Christian Shellman has various stories where it's like he'll tell this one story, and this the whole time you've been holding in your hand an authentic postcard from somebody written right before they stepped foot on the Hindenburg or whatever.
Oh, and wow!
He does this one routine. And keep in mind, he's I think Belgian or from Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And he does this one routine for Germans where he starts off by saying, here's a very sensitive photograph. I don't want you to handle it with your hands. Do me a favor, put on these gloves. And they put on the gloves. And this guy's, you know, handling all these photographs so we won't get his fingerprints on him, won't mess him up. And he starts to, and as the guy's going through these photographs, he starts to weave this tale of this Jewish family that went to a concentration camp and later died, and as they're handling all these photographs, he eventually reveals to the person while he's telling the story, he was like, by the way, the SS officer involved in all of these deaths, the one who caused them, his name was so-and-so, and you're wearing his gloves, and you look down, and for sure enough, they're SS, authentic SS gloves that he got, and it's just
I thought that stood for super safe.
But it's like to hear him tell the story, the people who have experienced this, he gets a call 3 weeks later from somebody like, yeah, by the way, my buddy, he's still washing his hands three times a day.
Yes.
He feels
now that
dirty.
That actually
inside.
Brings me to, I'm not surprised you would go there being a magician, because there's somebody.
That's all people talk about.
George, yeah.
Is death and the Holocaust. Great going, magic.
Well, George, they referenced George Frazer, whose book, The Golden Bough, was the first scholarly treatment to talk about superstitions. And it's across, you know, human societies all over, who talk about sympathetic magic. And that's a big part of what you and Andrew and anybody involved in magic, even on stage, as a trivial kind of.
I'm not going to lie. Like, when I hear sympathetic magic, I mean, I just picture me and Andrew on stage talking about how sad we are that we don't look better.
We're like, Sympathetic Magic, great Tegan and Sarah album name.
But like
I love that. The knots, like, does the person do something when they have the gloves? Do they do like some sort of sorting of photographs or something? And then they find out that they did repeated a dastardly deed or.
I think it just provides some kind of thrill. Like for women who feel like the constant victim, you feel empowered by having these objects. You're like, you know what? I'm more powerful than this because I.
Like Justin's Nazi memorabilia collection?
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
But I know that
I have dirty doodles and love notes between various members of the Third Reich.
Well, like Marilyn Manson has Hitler's coat hanger.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He does.
And that sounds like a punchline.
That sounds like a Marilyn hanger. Manson cover band, to be
right,
honest.
Hitler's right.
Coat hanger. That sounds like a lyric from a Beck song.
Right. Hitler's coat hanger is dangling all over the place.
Somebody was saying that, like, yeah, people would go, why does he have that? And the answer was because. And I was saying, no, I think the better answer is because he really hates wrinkles. then at Penn Jillette. Penn Jillette, apparently, the story was told that he would have this. He always believed that you wanted to have something that the other party didn't know when you were negotiating with them. That way, you have some sort of secret. And he claimed that he would actually had like a Nazi flag that he would stand under when he would negotiate with like an agent or somebody. And Penn, obviously, very, very anti-Nazi. But for that was the thing. It's like, this guy has no idea that I'm naked standing under a Nazi flag right now.
During telephone negotiations.
Yeah. Audio. Yeah.
Over the phone. Yeah. And he's worth like $100 million now. So
with agents, which we all know what that means. They normally live in California.
Right. And Nazis hate Californians.
Woo, yes. Do they?
Just watch Rocketeer. So, Bonnie, I don't have, you know, your quandary puts me into a difficult situation because it's that thing where you go, you know, how you've been asked for something so weird and it changes the dynamic of the relationship slightly. I'm glad to find out I can just go to a website and buy this card.
Yeah, it makes it easier. And you feel somewhat comforted by the fact that apparently there's a market for this. So your girlfriend's not the only freak.
That's your mental U-turn. That it's like, she's like, Andrew, I would like for you to buy me this card. And Andrew's like, I got to break into a police department and steal it from state's evidence. And it's like you can buy it for me on Super. Well, that's easy. Wow.
Yeah, it's like I'm already like, I'm going to need bolt cutters. I'm going to need a distraction, maybe some smoke grenades. Oh, there's a website. Right. And I've already forgotten how sick. I'm like, wait a second. This is sick.
All right, now, so this is actually a good question because it leads into the
things you do for love.
It leads into the bigger things of what is the, do any of you guys have an object that you are disgusted by, but you keep it because it is tied to history? And I see a giant grin on Andrew's face as I even bring up the question.
No, I'm just like that. I just like you know, because my mind went to it. You're disgusted by, but you're tied to.
Well, no. That you buy or keep. It's like you're like, no,
yeah, I'm not talking about an organ,
but it's awesome that I have it.
My Phantom Menace ticket stub for.
Oh, good answer.
I'll tell you what, and Bonnie will be horrified I'm sharing this. But when I went to,
you just want to out yourself.
I really want
to let everybody know that you have clan robes.
Oh my god, that's horrific.
It's not that bad.
By the way, have you seen that?
I never really thought about that. That would be really sick to have.
If you wore clan robes, Brian, it would just make you a lighter pink.
No. By the way, have you seen that that PETA ad that starts where a member of the KKK shows up to the American Kennel Club, the AKC? So like this is not a lie. This is a real ad you can look on YouTube where basically they're doing like, so it is important that we dock their ears and that we shorten their tails so that we can maintain the blah, blah, blah. And then in walks this guy full on dressed as a Klan member. And he walks in and they're like, I'm sorry, sir. What can I help you? And he's like, oh, yeah, it's the AKC, right? He's like, yeah, I think you're in the wrong place. And they're like, no. You guys are for purity of breeds, right? You know, like purity of the master race. And then they're like, no, they're like, They're like, we want to keep dog lines pure. And he's like, same difference. And he sits down, and then it's like a PETA ad, like, stop breedism is the thing that they say in it. it's 100% true. I'm sure in the chat room for those listening, they're already finding the link to it.
It just reminds me of like an outtake or something from Best in Show.
it totally plays like that. And in fact, I thought it was super hip and funny. And then I saw it was a PETA ad. I was like,
all right.
Whatever.
Whatever, people.
So, well, speaking of mixed breed dogs, do you hear what was wandering the streets of Brooklyn?
Wait, did you buy it for?
Did I buy it for? I mean, is she really
hot? It's $146.
How much?
I think it was like $146. Did you buy her that card?
Yeah, she's got like a dark. She's got like if she's got kind of that dark sense of humor, and I really like her, I probably would. You know, but I'd keep an eye on her. If she's like this very normal. Oh, there's Brian.
What if she decides that it has to sleep on the pillow?
Brian, is this your TED Talk?
Oh, is this the American Kennel Club?
Yes, but you know we're discussing.
You believe in the sanctity of pure bloodlines, right?
Yes.
And breeding to achieve a master race?
Well, master pedigree. They're
race, pedigree. I mean, that's just all semantics. I'm going to fit right in here. You're my kind of people.
Oh. Hey, are there going to be snacks later?
You know, friends, sometimes a company just wants to spend $30 to hear their name on a podcast. Rootech Incorporated. Making life about the same. Look them up at RUTECH Incorporated on Google or something. I don't know. Type it in. See what happens. Choose your own adventure in life. I'm not here to tell you what to do.
And then it comes back with that all dogs are created equal nonsense or whatever.
All dogs created equal, I ask you.
Why?
Are they? This brings us our next subject.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Wait, are you saying there's a master breed?
Well, they all have the right to vote. Of course they are.
So some dogs shouldn't be treated differently than others.
I'll tell you this much. Any dog with an annoyingly yappy voice who keeps yapping all the time and pees all over your carpet all the time should just be
live in the Brian Brushwood household.
Yeah. What about like pit bulls?
Oh no, I see where you're headed here. Dude, pit bulls. Brian Dunning from Skeptoid just did a thing on pit bulls, asking like whether or not it was fair that they totally have the reputation as being killers. And the word, even the word pit bull doesn't really mean anything, because it's like there's bull terriers and there's no one specific breed called a pit bull. It's sort of a loose term.
Right.
Is what I hear.
No. The answer is no.
Yeah, there was Gladwell did a thing on that, which really was devoid of actual any kind of, you played the semantics thing to get away from it. And, you know, when you, it gets this thing, you can kind of say, well, there's not a specific breed. So how do I, like, yeah, but there's, you talk to breeders and they can tell you this is, you know, you're going to get more things that we would call a pit bull are going to attack people than pound for pound than a poodle or some other dog. That's what some people would say.
Yeah, no, yeah. And that was one of the things.
Also, like, plays into pit bull owners, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, and that was the thing, is it was the self-selection. It's like the more of these types of breeds that have famous media cases of them being bad dogs, the more the type of people who want nasty, bad dogs will buy this particular breed. And of course, you know, intentionally breed it to be nasty and mean.
So there was a dog found wandering through Brooklyn, and they captured the dog. And now the dog is currently being held in a shelter away from all the other dogs, because there's something very special about this dog.
Levitation.
It can talk.
Yes.
It's invisible.
Both. It's a levitating, talking dog. Thanks for spoiling the bit. Let's move on to the next topic. What could be special about this dog? What could be so unique about this dog?
It has a treasure map on its belly.
It can smell cancer.
But it's being punished, let's say.
Laser eyes.
It bought Hitler memorabilia.
It's dating Andrew Maine.
Hey, I'm wandering through Brooklyn.
Andrew, can you put this dog out by itself in the corner? It's a bad dog.
What is it?
It What is special about their dog that would be a negative? Do you already know this one, Justin?
I don't know.
It has a birthmark in the shape of North Vietnam.
It has a birthmark in the shape of North Vietnam. And for that, it's being punished and put in a cage. How dare you, dog?
Secrets back for the tunnel rats, didn't you, doggy?
What are you, Ho Chi dog? Get back in your cage.
What's wrong with this little pup, Andrew?
This dog is considered an exotic pet, and it's illegal to own in New York City.
Whoa.
Now, it is half wolf.
Yeah, winter is coming.
Yes.
It's a dire wolf.
They found a 53-pound crossbreed female wolf was found wandering the streets of Brooklyn. Which apparently, but it had a collar, so it belonged to somebody, but nobody's come forward yet. But apparently, it's considered a exotic pet, and so she's being housed in an animal shelter, and they're going to move her to a facility for unwanted wolf dogs.
Now, man.
Of course there's one of those in New York.
There was also
a Chinese laundry.
There was a great, I want to say it was a Nova thing. Maybe it was another special. Bonnie probably knows what I'm talking about. Yeah. But like they were talking about wolves and dogs, and they took a breeder who was very good at training dogs, and they were like, hey, take these wolf pups. And like apparently everything was fine for the first like 6 months. And then at some point, like, The wolves turned into a honey badger, and they just did not give an F. I mean, they were just like, whatever. It's like, I'm going to hop on this table because I feel like it, and I'm a wolf. What are you going to do? And it's like, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's the problem with them is as they're puppies, they're delightful puppies. They're very fun to be around, but once they reach a certain point, they're a wolf.
Well, and so there's a reason why we don't put them in domesticated situations, because they just have that little feral element of them that they're going to go do all they want.
Yeah, but having said that, like, I understand the appeal. Like, part of me wants a wolf.
Especially if you're trying to take down House Lannister.
Part of me really wants a fox, actually. Who is that Russian researcher who tried to domesticate foxes and got
pulling
them
that up right now?
Are you? Yeah, no. Like, seriously, he was able to. He kept selecting in breed for more domesticated, happy foxes, and eventually the fox's tail started to curl the way modern dogs do now. And eventually, it got to the point where some foxes would actually bark. And I heard about this, and I was like, why is this not a thing we do? Why do we not domesticate foxes? Let's domesticate all the animals that we like in the world.
It was a 40-year experiment to get to that point. But Matt Ridley has a great thing up on his blog, The Rational Optimist, where he talks about the chicken. The chicken you eat today has been the process of evolutionary, you know, of just really, really careful genetic selection. And it's 6 weeks of age. It's something like six times as heavy as a chicken was 50 years ago at that age.
Wow.
Kind of like,
and
Americans.
You know, they compare it to, and that's not like, oh, it's horrible. No, that's just the genetic stock. If you compare it to a chicken breed that we still have from that era,
it's all selective breeding. It's not hormone injection. It's not anything truly artificial. It's like purely by breeding selection we've gotten here.
Yeah, just the, you know, just regular feed alone, it'll do that. And if you use the special feeds, there's other stuff. Yeah, they'll get even bigger. But yeah, they're that big. And, you know, that's like with turkeys. Turkeys are so big now they can barely stand up.
That's the same thing with corn. In fact, if you ever see the documentary King Corn, which is on Netflix instant streaming, the most common stock of corn to produce, because the majority of corn is not used for human consumption. Most of it is used for animal feed or whatever. So they care about yield, number of ears, and how fast it grows. And they don't care how it tastes. And there's this one moment where the filmmakers bite in and they're like, wow, this tastes like ass. And then they're like, yeah, whatever, cows like it. And sure enough, that's where corn-fed beef comes from.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're almost at the new year. It's almost 2012, which makes me feel really silly to say 2012.
Yeah. At what age? Here's what I want to know.
That's why I call it 20 dozen.
20 dozen?
Yo, dirty dozen. Dirty dozen on deck.
The dew dozen.
How young do you have to be for that not to sound like the future? Because, like, obviously, to all of us, it sounds like the future. Justin, is 2012 sound like the future to you?
Like, yeah. Do I think of myself as a child being told in the year 2012, like, and that being a really far time away? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe it's a thing that, like, only me and Bonnie and Andrew have, because we're, like, what, 5 years older than you?
Because we're old.
Yeah, we're old. But it's, like, to us, like, the year 2000 still smells like the future.
In the year 2000.
Exactly, right?
I love that they still do those.
And I love the fact that we can remember when that was funny because it was going to be the year 2000.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that is an old bit. Jesus.
So, I mean, science of the future, like, I don't know, like, the four of us video conferencing on the internet, and I mean, that's pretty. You sit there and you go, like, oh, does it feel like the future? Does it feel like the future? You know, as I stare at this little camera on this little aluminum laptop that, you know.
Well, absolutely.
Hold on a second. My mom's calling. I got a video call with her. You know?
Well, and plus also, think about the intimacy of our friendship, and think about it that in terms of how little time the four of us are actually able to spend in the same place at the same time, obviously.
Without trying to kill each other.
Well, Bonnie and I, of course, living in Austin, you guys living in South Florida. You know,
actually, we're in your attic. Come on, Justin, let's go upstairs and show them.
Tra-la-la-la-la-la-la-la.
You're like, we're coming down to push you into your pond.
Exactly. What do you think that
No, it's amazing.
Every time Bonnie and I try to have a quiet moment, we hear a dog howling.
Well, not really howling, but
in the attic.
Just panting and giggling repeatedly.
It's the giggling.
And then it's a slap fight.
It's when the dog says, OMG, they're really doing that.
So,
by the way, the giggling dog, great Decemberist album title.
Two Earth-sized planets have just been found by the Kepler telescope.
Yeah.
Now, Earth size, but not in the Goldilocks zone, correct?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe in the Lava Man Goldilocks zone.
Finally, Lava Men walk the Earth far away.
Lava Man.
And there was a thing we put up on Weird Things that Live Science was talking about, that do you think it's because they're Kepler 22, I think, like E and D? But they were saying that it really is, we're doing in ourselves no service, either in the scientific community or in the popular community, by not naming these planets things, that we should be giving these planets names.
And it doesn't matter. It could be the GoDaddy planet that you love to hate or whatever. I mean, it's like names matter because they spark something in the imagination of the populace, and this scientific place that we're in where it's like, oh, it's got to be NFG 2011-45Z.
Well, wait a second. Isn't there a naming process? Like, we've named, like, some of, like, the minor planets now, and then we, like, moons and stuff. Isn't that a thing where it just takes forever? I mean, like, how long did it take them to figure out, you know what, Pluto, not a planet anymore?
But it's still a thing. It's still going to be Pluto. You know,
it just takes them forever to do these things.
Yeah, but in the meanwhile, like, we could be calling this thing a super awesome explosion planet.
Yeah, but then, the International Astronomical Association, they got to have a meeting, and they got to decide. Because, like, if it were me, like, hey, listen, guys, I found planet Drew, you know? Like, oh,
yeah,
great.
Yeah, well, it's like we had that planet, and we did the NSFW episode, like, right there that day. We called it Bone Earth. Boom. Now it's got a name. Now Everybody is more interested in talking about this planet because they can call it Boner.
Yes.
And yes, it's a joke about wieners. But that's beside the point. We can name it Lava Man Planet and Lava Man Planet 2. This time it's bubbling.
And you know, when you go, you walk into a department store, it is such a thrill for a girl to go through and look at all the lipstick names because they're so inspiring.
Yeah, like cinnamon. Oh.
Winter chartreuse.
Yeah. It's mango bed sled or something.
Lips.
Yeah, I love it. You know,
man musk.
Petal Breeze.
You know, chocolate that one, guilt. That one didn't taste very good.
Chocolate guilt.
Strawberry cloud.
And if you apply Musty that to regret. Planets, oh my gosh. Imagine what would happen to
I want
the
to put
space.
Shame on my lips.
I'm all for Nate. I think we need to figure out a way to get these things names. I agree. I'm all for you with that so we can start giving these things rather than long, complicated ones. Speaking of space, guess what's happening on February 7th?
The space shuttle goes back to spell wait.
We killed it and buried it.
Hey, remember back when we had reusable spacecraft? That was awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. We never actually had reusable spacecraft, though. That was a
remember
lot.
When we would kid ourselves by spending billions of dollars to call them "quote unquote" reusable spacecraft?
Yes,
that was fantastic. Although
well,
I'll tell you,
I know what. Where SpaceX is going to send a thing all the way up down there to the International Space
all
Station.
The way up down there is the name of the mission.
So, yes.
SpaceX. All the way up down there, great Grateful Dead album title.
Yeah. All the way up down there.
SpaceX, which, you know, is the new singularity for us and what we talk about, is set to launch. They've got a scheduled launch date. Now, the problem is they're scheduled to launch to meet the ISS, International Space Station. The orbital insertion on that is so narrow that I think it's like a 20-minute launch window. So it's going to have – they're going to have several days in which they're going to try to meet it. But they are scheduled on February 7th. Remember, SpaceX was the first private company to send a rocket into space and return it to Earth successfully. Now they're going to be the first private company to try to send a rocket to the International Space Station. And that is happening February 7th.
I would love to see a documentary, like a really spirited documentary telling the story of the corporate culture inside SpaceX, because there's something they're doing that is inspiring to all of the people working on the inside, and I'd love to know more of that.
If you get a chance, on their website, they have a bunch of behind-the-scenes videos of the SpaceX facility and Elon Musk giving a tour. Really, really worth watching if you haven't had a chance yet.
Andrew, could you talk some more about orbital insertion?
Well,
also,
the key is
you paint yourself
you've
got to
have
clown
the right angle for orbital insertion. If you're at the wrong pitch, it all falls apart. And you got to make sure the thrust is spot on. Oh. Not all at once, because even though you're going to the upper atmosphere and it starts to get thinner, you've got a bit of a gravity well.
Could you say that with a knife in your hand?
Dressed like a clown.
Well, you're signing this card.
By the way, I'm live streaming this to omghorchick.com.
That's my what? Biggest fear. So anyhow, I'm going to try to be there February 7th. I plan on going there to go watch it in Cape Canaveral.
Oh, man, I'm so jealous. I would love to be there. And, of course, Cape Canaveral, the whole reason that particular area is so important for space travel is because it's, what, close to the equator?
Space.
Yeah, it's closer to space. Space is only like 20 feet away down there, we all know.
Well, it's right
on
95.
You can jump really hard from Cape Canaveral and you'll end up in orbit.
It's between Titusville and Daytona. You just take a ride off 95 and you're like 5 minutes from space.
Next exit, orbit.
Yeah, you've got the advantage of Florida being this big, long peninsula. If something blows up, you can kind of let it fall down on either side.
Is that really part of the reason?
Mm-hmm. Well, think about what happened to Houston.
What happened to Houston?
Like, with all the little parts falling to Earth and...
Of what?
Of a space shuttle.
People, Brian!
But nothing ever fell on Houston. Oh, you're saying if it was there.
No, yeah, you can do
launches in California when you aim out over the Pacific Ocean. You know, Florida gives the ability to decide which way you want to go. And then, like in Texas, you've got McGregor, Texas, where they have a lot of, you know, test facilities for rockets and stuff. That's where Jeff Bezos, which they tested their single stage to orbit craft. It's going to be exciting.
Well, and but Bonnie, Mission Control, Johnson Space Center is in.
Said Johnson.
Yes, is in Houston. That's why when you hear people bouncing around on the moon.
No, but I thought something
Yeah, I think there was like Texas. Debris fell.
Oh, no, debris. Okay, no, debris fell all over Texas when the Columbia disintegrated. The debris happened to fall all over Texas.
02 or 03, right?
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Dude, I'll tell you what, man. That weirdly.
Oh, yeah, that was just the Texas lake. Remember they had with the drought? The lake drained and they found part of one of the rocket cylinders.
Are you serious? Oh. That just happened?
Yes. Yeah, here we go. Texas drought exposes Columbia shuttle debris.
Oh, my God. Let me tell you, the Columbia disaster struck me worse than the Challenger because I was like, 11 when Challenger blew up? And it was just a thing that, you know, we're like, oh, something bad happened and everyone's sad about it. But when I, you know, I was, 20, 23, 24, I guess? And it's like, no, I guess 26. Like, I was old enough to realize how delightfully wonderful space travel was and how precious the space shuttle program was to our advancement in that regard. And it's like, it really, really struck me. Columbia hit me way worse than Challenger.
Oh, my God.
Well, we had an amazing meeting when that happened.
Oh, my gosh.
And that was, you know, we're all a bunch of science nerds there. Then all of a sudden we find out that, you know, the Columbia had disintegrated on reentry.
Yeah, that's rough.
I just remember I was really messed up because it was Challenger, the 80.
Yeah.
Yeah.
86.
And then this is like, you know, I grew up in kind of a poor school, so they wheeled one of the few TVs.
The one color television.
It was like really special because we were actually going to get to watch it. And then, so it started and then it just
ended. Watched it live?
Yeah, we were watching it live.
No.
And then it was like, well, that wasn't very exciting. Like, we didn't understand what happened because it was like nothing really happened. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, doot, doot. And then it was just done. And then the teacher was crying. And we're like, what's going on? You know, it was really effed up.
Yeah. All happened. That's amazing.
It was. So that one messed me up a little bit more. It was a little.
Remember, that was because I was the first teacher in space. I have a memory of watching it, too. And I don't know if that's a made up memory or whatever. But I remember Arkiva watching the TV and they do that because it was a teacher in space.
Yeah. And we had like the other classrooms all piled into one room.
Oh, my God. So,
I'll tell you, we should probably change the subject before Andrew's fake girlfriend asks for a greeting card signed by the atmosphere.
Okay. Right.
Hey, everybody. Are you familiar with the chat realm? Well, they're super fans of shows like this and NSFW show. Do you enjoy their antics? If you don't, you should. They're pretty fun. And you can get a big fat taste of all that hilarity by checking out the Chronicles of Chat Realm. Watch as Curly, Demon 5, King Kaz, and T2T2 try to survive in the world of Minecraft. Make sure to watch it from the beginning by going to youtube.com/chatrealm and watch. It's like 9 episodes. They're funny. I like it. I guarantee it.
Let's do a quick round table predictions for 2012.
Oh, this is a great question.
We'll each do three predictions.
Wow, we did this last year. We should have had foresight and went back to that episode.
Look, I think I'm pretty sure if you go back, you'll hear Brian say, pretty sure Steve Jobs will die.
Oh, stop it.
Pretty sure that Google will launch its social network, and pretty sure that the iPhone 5 will not release, but instead we'll get an iPhone 4S. I'm almost certain that's what I said.
And that's because your real name is Brian Engadget.
Who wants to go first?
Okay, we can each do, we'll go, I'll do one, then somebody else does one, then
all
we
right.
come back
we'll
around.
We'll go in the round, in the round.
Okay. I'm going to go for the obvious sort of low-hanging fruit here. I think this year is where we see – I'm going to be nerdy here and mutter to myself here. But, you know, seeing how the printer bot – remember we talked about
Maker
that? The
bot.
Guy was
yeah,
3D
all
printer.
That stuff.
You know how much funding they finished at on their Kickstarter fund? This was a 3D printer that could print,
ton.
You know, device things out of plastic. Tell it your computer, whatever, to make it, and it could make these things out of plastic, just whatever you want within reason.
Right.
They finished their Kickstarter fund. The guy set out to raise $20,000, and he wanted to produce a low cost $499 kit. They finished their Kickstarter fund with over $800,000.
Holy cow! That's amazing.
So that means there's a market demand. There's a huge demand for that sub-$1,000 3D printing device. I think this year we're going to start to see commercial manufacturers take a closer look at that. We might see things like, look what Square's done for credit card. I think we're going to start seeing some very serious entrepreneurial, you know, capital going into the idea of let's try to make these things because we think there's going to be a growing market for being able to make parts and stuff in your home.
And like, look at the Glyph clip Kickstarter. The Glyph, of course, was just this weird little handle clip thing that you could put onto the back of your iPhone. Like the original units that, and in fact, Andrew is holding one up right now. If you were an initial investor, they didn't even bother to give you one of the mass-produced units. They just gave you one that they printed off of a 3D printer. There's going to be an entire space for entrepreneurs to, you know, make something that is – the demand is so high that people will pay $30 for it, but it costs all of, you know, $3 of ABS plastic.
Yeah, I don't think we're all going to be making our Christmas presents 2012 using them, but I do think it's going to be we're going to start seeing many more of them coming on the market. And now we're going to enter that phase of that the PC in the 1978.
If you wanted to state your prediction as a testable hypothesis, something that you're like, yes, it will happen, no, it won't, well, how would you describe it?
I would say that we're going to see commercially available 3D printers under $1,000 that you would be able to go to, much like you could you'd be able to go and finish commercial 3D printers under $1,000.
So like on Amazon, basically.
Yeah, maybe on Amazon, or it might be like Square or something like that. You know, yeah. Cut out the middleman kind of, because you know that it's. I wanted to say on Amazon, like, yeah, but maybe why give them 30% or 40% when you could just probably word of mouth? So I think that we're going to see, you know, very commercially available sub-$1,000 full 3D, you know, not just kits, assembled 3D printers.
All right, I got one for you. In 2012, we will discover an Earth-sized planet in the Goldilocks zone, because we've had the one, we've had the other. We found planets in the Goldilocks zone. We found planets that are Earth-sized, but we've not found both in the same star system. I think we're going to find an Earth-sized planet in the Goldilocks zone. And the kicker, I think, we'll be able to test. And I think from spectral analysis, we'll be able to see there's water on it.
Excellent.
Nice. I'm going to go with a technology one. I think, as we all know, 2012 is a election year, and we are going to see the fruits of a pattern we've already seen in terms of a lot of the primary candidates getting far more out of their debate performances than actually campaigning and doing stump speeches physically in places. This is we are going to, as we have the last two elections, see a dramatic increase in direct communication via YouTube and Twitter and Facebook specifically from candidates to campaigns. We're going to see that's going to be the place where things are going to shift more than, let's say, a flub on the campaign trail or something like that. You're going to see more candidates, whoever comes out of the Republican primary and Barack Obama, managing their message directly to their people far more.
Bonnie?
Well, I predict, as a direct result of this podcast, that on the market in a Dillard's near you, you can buy a lipstick called Shame on Your Face.
You know what? Actually, I think that's really good. I guarantee you there's got to be some boutique out there who already has a lipstick called Shame.
Mm-hmm.
Just Shame on Your Face. All right. My second one. An obvious one, but I'll state it. We've seen Apple with Siri, which I really like. I use Siri all the time. Google has said, voice, you know, that phones are to be talked to and all that, which is Google talk for we're working on this really hard and we're going to come out and we want to try to
blow. So Google's version of crapping all over an idea is a confession that it's like, yes, we're hard at work at that.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at, you know, what was the number one ad of the holiday season is Santa talking to Siri.
Yes.
And, you know, when I was in China, pull out my iPhone, Chinese girls, oh, can I talk to Siri?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Google's going to get into it. Google's smart. They've got brilliant people. And you know, it's of course, we got that. Oh, well, Google already had it. Like, no, we didn't have, you know, it's not the same. It's having specific things that you have to tell it is different than just like, ah, change it to this or whatever. Google's going to get serious. We're going to get this. The voice wars are going to start, and it's going to be part of the AI war of these better things. And I think by the end of the year, our interactions with our phones, Androids, iPhones, all around, is going to be a radically different thing than it was, you know, pre-iPhone 4S. And I think that we're going to see everybody's going to benefit from this, and it's going to be exciting to see. I think voice is going to get very, very big this year.
Can I offer as my second prediction a corollary to your prediction? I think you're 100% dead on. But I think to go even farther, I think that our fundamental understanding, Siri has completely transformed what we expect from an artificially intelligent agent. And if you look at the news stories on Siri, it's all about not the functionality of it, but about the humor of it, about the fact that you could say, Siri, I need to hide a body, and she comes up with, you know, what do you need? A quarry, a mine shaft, a swamp, you know, but that kind of thing.
Just interrupt, like how people got upset that if you asked for an abortion clinic, it wouldn't show you where one was, and like, oh, they're censoring. It's like, well, no, Planned Parenthood doesn't list itself as abortion
clinic. Yes, exactly. So I'm gonna bet that Siri, my prediction for 2012 is that Siri will be the outlier for 2011, but in 2012 we will see 3 to 5 personalities emerge in 2012 that you could subscribe to instead of Siri. And at first they'll be on different platforms, but eventually these will be subscription services that you choose to go with instead of your default. You can have by default Siri on iOS devices. You can have by default, you know, Jarvis on your Android devices. But you will be able to subscribe to these other personalities that will be crowdsourced and written by clever programmers who have imbued these different AI voices with specific personalities that you can get to. Right. Now that's beyond 2012, but I'm going to say we're going to see the beginning of that.
Are you saying everybody just wants Marvin from Hitchhiker's Guide?
Well, Brian, yeah. But you're saying like what they do with GPS units now with the different voices, the celebrity voices, and
right? Only it's with true personalities, because with voices it just says you know turn right, turn left. You know, the force tells me you need to turn left.
This is Indiana Jones. Turn left.
Yes, exactly. But it's like it will be true personality because the wit and humor of a crowd of writers will be imbued into this device, and it will have pre-written clever ways to handle different things, and even sarcasmo will be available. That you
what happens when Siri is able to, or whatever we get from Google, Gary is able to start testing jokes on you, and it works, and so then it goes and tests it on Justin, and this, and it starts to evolve. What happens when they get funnier than we are,
dude? I guarantee you, look, in 10 years that will happen. Absolutely,
it's already happening.
You guys need to stop it now. You need to kill it.
We need to stop the podcast right now. We need to stop doing weird things right now.
No. You need to stop the AI Siri before it gets funnier.
No. Well, I'll tell you. First, it'll be the AIs actually getting funny.
Where do you get off?
But then you'll have mega personalities like your Brad Pitts or whatever who will say, for example, before he passed on, we'll take why can I not remember the name of our favorite atheist? Christopher Hitchens.
Yeah.
Pope John Paul.
Christopher Hitchens passed, maybe people would take all of his writings and his wit and wisdom and imbue a device with the personality, the rough personality.
Wine is red.
but have him, you know, take thousands of sample of his voices to where within 10 years we're going to have devices that speak with the voice of our favorite people and respond as though that person would respond.
Or Brian, you think about you take all the video of him and you have a website that's the virtual Hitchens, and yes, he pops up on a screen and his eyesight's on. And it's, you know, it's him. And you say, well, what did you think about this? And he starts to tell you his idea about this. How would you compare these two thoughts?
That already exists. If you go to VU.com, VYOU.com, people have created these virtual instances of themselves. And when you look at them, it's their neutral state is sort of like a Harry Potter mm-hmm. photograph where they're just sort of sitting and fidgeting and waiting patiently for your comment. And then you ask a question, and either it's something they have a pre-recorded answer for, in which case they speak freely about it, or it's something that they don't know, in which case they're like, I don't know nothing about that.
I would totally get the Charlie
Chaplin. But I mean, it's the idea that not the pre-recorded, wait for the canned response, yeah. but the idea that where you could take the, it could synthesize an answer based upon, because it could actually understand the data set.
Well, yeah, and if you think about that in the idea of Hitchens, where, you know, he would write, the reason why he was such a brilliant daily writer and why he was a great column writer was because he had this gigantic breadth of institutional knowledge about these various subjects. So if something happened overnight in Israel, he knew all the players involved, all the things that had happened throughout the years, because he had this great repository for that. So if, let's say, you took that, you could ask him about, you know, what happens about, you know, like, what do you think about the assassination of blank person? And you could have a virtual Hitchens basically give you what would have been his Slate column
right.
tomorrow.
Right.
You know, based on his, the synthesis of his past work. So that really is a brilliant idea.
All right. Bonnie, you got a second prediction for 2012?
Well, I think it extends further into the future, but I'm going to say this year, just for sake of argument.
Yes.
But you know all that timeline development that they're doing on Facebook?
Yes. And telling your own story back to you.
Right. And you're putting your photos on there and you got all your friends. I think they're going to charge you out the wazoo so that you can't access that unless you pay them $50 a month or some huge fee that all of a sudden they're monetizing.
So you think they're going to monetize all that?
I think they're going to get you hooked. It's free now. And they're going to get you really, really hooked and dependent on this. And you're going to be so involved because it's your timeline.
Their end goal is you, an 80-year-old Bonnie, being like, who was I? And then they're like,
you can't access
we can tell
it.
You your life story
yes.
for $100.
Yes, exactly. You know, I think they're going to steal your identity and sell it back
so
to you.
So you think we're going to see some of that in the beginnings of that in 2012?
I think they're working on it in 2012.
All right. I have two kind of cord cutter predictions. I think that this is going to be a year where the day and date movie thing that we really start to see a splintering in terms of not your big, you know, tentpole features, like not your Batmans, not your Avengers, but you start to see a lot of what would have been, you know, either indie films or even wide release comedies or dramas that have a very specific niche market. You start to see them being marketed more as big, the same advertising budget, but yeah, if you want to go see it in the theater, you can go see it in the theater. It's fine. It's going to be playing in the, like, you know, a fourth of the places that we would have put it maybe 10 years ago. But here's the ways that you can download it on every other
so
platform specifically, on the same day.
Like thinking about, like, for example, I actually think Kevin Smith's Red State would have done much better if it was a day and date. You could go see it to it in a theater, or you could see it live on your computer on
well,
the same
was,
day.
Wasn't it close to day and date, or it was out on download?
What he did was he did...
Not with the road show.
Right, he did a road show where it was a Q&A and he promoted it. Right, correct. But then it was very close to day and date, but if you could see it and where. But it almost sounded like it just didn't come out anywhere in the theater unless it was by special request.
And here's my other thought. I also think that you are going to start to see cable channels start to migrate in 2012 or start to make the moves to migrate to 2012 towards set-top boxes like Apple TVs and Roku's and various places that now
start.
What?
HBO Go is already available on the Roku.
Well, and available on the Xbox.
But you need a
an HBO
subscription
right.
from a cable company.
Yeah, right. The problem is that I would love to see that, but they are so beholden to the cable operators about that. Like, I can't get HBO Go on my Roku because their agreement was with Comcast.
Yeah.
That Comcast says no.
Right.
I mean, I can get it on my iPhone, but not that. So I hope so. I just – that's just such a –
It's such a there's this nested entanglement of currently existing agreements that prevents anything awesome.
Well, look what happened with the soap operas. Like, what was it? The ones they canceled, they were going to try to move to the internet.
And that absolutely.
Yeah, they couldn't get an agreement with the unions. You know, and you've got a bunch of actors and people who worked on the show who are now going to be out of work because they just couldn't get an agreement because the unions were like, we want this much. And not to say the unions are the only ones are at fault there at all. I mean, sure. Who knows what the producers are wanting, but they just, it was. But I've read, if you look at the numbers, what unions ask, even for creating, if you're a union actor to do cable or to do internet stuff, it is very high. It is very, very unrealistically high compared to what you're going to make.
But let's say, all right, so right now I am a subscriber to the NHL Center Ice Package over my
Apple NHL.
PC,
they're one of the supporters of SOPA. Go ahead.
Okay.
Are they really? Yeah. So
exactly.
What's up, fascist?
Well, everybody can.
How do you
can
like it?
The leave NHL day is December 29th. But I mean, like, what's to say that them putting their proprietary channel, the NHL channel, which is currently on all these cable packages, to put that as part of my NHL Center Ice Package, which is something that I could put on and stream. So I think there's a lot of networks that I do totally agree we're going to have to see a complete reshifting or implosion of the current cable system before that happens. And I don't think that that's going to happen in 2012. But I do think that you will start to see the beginnings of some fringe channels where that is not as big of a thing, or they're powerful enough that they can kind of start to leak some of their content in the same way ESPN has and HBO has, that they're like, okay, well, we're not going to put this only to internet subscribers, but if you're already getting this,
you're saying sort of a corporate version of the Louis C.K. experiment will happen on a cable level.
I think that eventually you are going, you know, that I think we are seeing less cable subscribers as opposed to the rate of growth for cable is not what it was. The rate of people who will pay for stuff additionally, you know, is only on the rise. And so it's only a matter of time before you start to see people, you know, some of these companies taking a chance on, like, well, could we get more than we would in a per person cable subscription model if we offered some of this content directly to our consumers?
All right. Last prediction. Go, Andrew.
Okay. I just touch upon, like, Bonnie, I hope Facebook, I don't think they would, but I think it would be great if they actually did think about charging for these things. And my reason is this: it's the problem Google has. Google is trying to base everything on a free thing. And because there's no money in pushing through, let's say, Android to older phones and other things, you get into this problem when everything is based upon marketing and advertising. It makes it hard for people who just want to buy something that works to do it, because it changes the incentives. So maybe it would be to sell the timeline to all those narcissists like yourself out there who want to look at that.
it also gives you incentive to have customer service, which is something
there is.
Google and Facebook are notoriously not particularly good at, because
it's free. Stop complaining. Like, I'll pay. I'd be happy to pay. My third prediction, the one that I'm going to make with my mouth and speak into the words,
is that by 2012, you'll actually have a prediction.
I will have a prediction. I don't know how to quantify this, but Jeff Bezos finally opened up this year about Blue Origin, his very secretive space program to create a relaunchable, reusable space, single stage to orbit craft. We're going to get SpaceX attempting to go to the ISS. And I think that when you start to see companies and identities going into and doing very public space things, this 2011, the idea was, oh, we've lost the space age. You know, we lost it to the Russians, and the Russians have had some very unfortunate setbacks. A number of their rockets have had problems, and it is unfortunate because it just affects everything else around it. I think that is a quantifiable thing. I think you're going to see more young people taking up an interest in careers in space. The idea that we are going to be 2012, and we're going to say, you know what, the space age is really beginning.
We're going to start dreaming again?
Yes, you can dream again, little Justin.
Finally.
Rocket Man.
by dreaming, oh, Bonnie Dark Knight means Rises will getting be awesome. High.
Yes. We're all going to be high as a kite.
No, I totally agree. I think that we're in an age now where I think 2012 is going to be a year where we look at the last decade of the space shuttle program and we're like, wow, was the reason why everybody was bored in space because our space exploration and rate of growth and discovery was slow motion compared to what we are doing now.
And if you think about it, if SpaceX pulls off what they're going to try to do on February 7th, if they pull it off, they are going to be the only rocket in the United States capable of docking with the International Space Station. Is going to have been built by a private capitalist who's just a little bit older than us, who's a very young thinking guy who's also involved in solar electricity, but that, you know, woe is us, no more ways to, we can't get to space anymore. We'll have a rocket that's perfectly capable of carrying astronauts into space, but we don't want to do it without the proper safety features that we've never had before. We're going to have that, and it's going to be SpaceX and Russia, you know, with China kind of trailing ways behind, but it's going to be SpaceX and Russia for the most part. I don't know if the Europeans are even capable of doing docking to the ISS or not, but you think about that we're going to have, you know, this capability that we hasn't even gotten a lot of mainstream attention yet. When he launched a rocket, since it's been around the Earth and it landed, it was kind of like got a little bit of a blip, but still people don't know about it. They still don't understand it. But when we have, February 7th is the launch, and I think it'll take a couple days to match orbits and stuff. If we all of a sudden we're docking with that and people see on the news the video of this thing docking, they're like, oh, what is this? Well, this is an American-built spacecraft that's going to the space station. Right. It didn't cost, you know, an exorbitant amount of money. There's NASA funding that went into it, but comparatively,
God, can I tell you?
It's
real
an
quick?
American craft. It's an American craft.
I hope so much that there's that. Like, I read those letters from Elon Musk regarding SpaceX's expenses, and it's just so super inspiring. But the back of my mind is some part that says, like, "Hey, man, hope this ain't a Ponzi scheme." Like, I mean, it's like I just want so much to believe that capitalism and ingenuity allows for this efficiency that makes possible stuff at a tenth of the cost of the government program. But some part of me was like, wow, you'll feel like a dumbass if this turns out to be all funded by cocaine. DeLorean.
That okay. was never so, actually so- proven. Without, you know, by removing the Elon Musk as a secret cocaine baron theory, you're like, you know, I think that there is a benefit to running these things that actually, I don't know, care about a budget and have, marks that they have to hit. And they look, say, well, look, if it goes no, over I'm this price, you. We can't do it and it's not feasible to do it.
I am with you. My conscious brain is 100% on your team. And that's like, well, that's how he could do it, is because he doesn't have to answer to us. I mean, the bottom line, but a private corporation. But then some quiet part of me are like, cocaine.
Well, Brian, those are very fair cocaine. Questions. And there is being a private company is not a magic wand. There's, you know, Microsoft spends billions and billions and billions of dollars to create products that smaller, more nimble companies can come out there and go do. And that's a reason why when they wanted to do video games, they're like, well, let's buy Bungie, you know, let's do
right.
this.
Right.
NASA did a study, and I think we've talked about this before. NASA actually did a study to analyze how SpaceX operates, and they said, yes, they can do this for a third, and I think that's being charitable towards NASA,
right.
of what it costs NASA to do. And a great book, I have a copy of it here, is the Mythical Man Month. And it was written like in the 70s or whatever, and it's all about how software projects just take forever because the information problems. And that's a problem in companies, and then when you get into government, it's even bigger. And some of the brightest people at SpaceX are former NASA employees who, you know, it's a very flat level organization. You know, they're building the rocket engines under the same roof as the people building the second and third stages. It's not a thing where you've got a thing that's being built in five different parts of the country or the world. And to get any sort of you know, consensus on something takes forever in conferences. This guy says, what are we doing over here? Gets up, walks over to the other guy and says, how are we making this? Well, let's go over to the factory. And they walk down a corridor into a hallway and they go into the factory floor.
Which really matters. That kind of thing, if you've ever dealt with any kind of large scale product, it really matters. The fact that that you're only five steps away from the next cubicle to ask the guy about X, mm-hmm. Y, or Z.
It's part of this, like why they say Apple's been very successful.
So your third prediction was what?
This is the, you know, we're going to see a bigger interest now in occupations and careers in space as a sign of the fact that we're realizing, oh, wow, it's just beginning.
All right. So I'm going to, and I guess we should wrap things up because we're running long here. I'm going to say that my third prediction is 2012 will be the first year that a fictional property or some kind of video property is born of the internet and remains on the internet as its primary source of money, but old media, either a cable network or something, ends up buying it with a secondhand agreement saying, like, yes, we understand that you make all your money on your internet channel, but we just want to show your content and put it up on our channel once a week. So it's like something like The Guild. The Guild was born of the internet, but it never really busted out of the internet. So imagine The Guild exploding and showing up on the Sci-Fi Network as a successful property on the Sci-Fi Network, but under some, but you know, when you look at the agreement, it's clear that Sci-Fi is a redheaded stepchild of the agreement.
Okay.
You just really want to sell scam school.
I really do. That's the, if you want to give me a call, 1-800-BRIAN.
Okay. I predict that infrared cooking is going to suck as much as regular cooking.
Oh my God. Okay. Can I out you on this?
Yeah, go
Your
ahead.
Your parents don't listen to this show, do they?
No.
I didn't have the heart to explain to them that infrared cooking, like if you look at it, it's just the same heating element that's in a MFing oven.
I know.
But and it's like I didn't have the heart to explain to them that the infrared is just heat. Like infrared is a code word for heat.
Right.
They're like Bonnie's parents gave us an infrared cooking thing.
Because you know they noticed on our on the comments from our Christmas card that we didn't have enough ovens in my in my house. so apparently I needed another one.
We got two convection ovens, a microwave oven. You're like, you know what you need is we saw this at the mall. It's an infrared oven. We're like, wow, what is an infrared oven? Oh, it's just an oven with a but that
cooks with light.
Looks like a bell jar, I guess, basically.
Oh, you know, but
that's your prediction, is that infrared cooking will not take off.
Well, yeah,
or that marketing
with me
term
specifically.
Yeah, you've been so polite. You made a grilled cheese sandwich in it.
I did. You know what though? It was the best grilled. It's a really elaborate grilled cheese sandwich.
All it means is that you're going to start making our grilled cheese sandwiches in our ovens now.
Yeah, it's an infrared grilled cheese sandwich.
Right. All right, Justin.
All right. 3D TVs will still suck. And
also gravity will still fall downward.
I'm going to say I got a Krueg coffee maker for Christmas.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to put myself at 1500 K cups for me only.
Is it,
I totally
those
can
are
agree,
awesome.
With the, agree with you. I think
okay,
they boil down to about 30
cents. I'm averaging
that.
Three a day since I got it, and that puts me a little over 1,000. I think I'm going to have days where I'm going to go 5 and 6.
Yeah.
So there we go. 1,500K cups in 2012.
Hey,
Let's roll.
Since we're running long, can we just all agree that there's only one pick that any of us care about this week? There's only one item that you must buy if you're a lover of science fiction or steampunk or of independent authors?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's The Professional's Guide to Fire Eating.
Oh, no. Sure it's not. And Jermaine, will you buy me this book?
Justin?
Brian, like, just has John Tilton airbrush some steampunk goggles on his face on the cover. Put a blimp in the background. Put a blimp. Perfect.
The sci-fi hit of the season. No, Justin, look, you have something to do with this. Explain it to us.
Why do I got to explain it always? Why don't Andrew explain it?
Well, because Andrew sounds like an egomaniac when he talks about how great his novel is.
Don't let the book. Jeez.
All right, come on. Come on, Andrew, go.
Nah. I don't want to sound like an egomaniac. I wrote a book.
It's not an egomaniac.
Hey, hey, do it for the fans in a gumshoe voice.
I wrote a book and I think it's good.
Chronological Man, The Martian Emperor. It's the sequel to Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist, which was a top science fiction seller of 2011. This will, I am absolutely positive, be a top science fiction seller in 2012. And, you know, really, I'll tell you what, folks, if you listen to this podcast and you know that Andrew Main was, for anybody on this podcast, and I know a whole lot of you reading, the breakout science fiction author of 2011, you're going to see why in this, you know, the last book that we're going to publish for this calendar year. It continues the story of Smith, who, if you like, you know, the elements of here, how does this grab you? Sherlock Holmes, Tony Stark, and Doctor Who, all mixed into one awesome character. And this book, for me, it's my favorite thing that I've ever read of Andrew's. It adds all the elements that you loved about the first book, and one thing that just is really right up my alley, which is an awesome bit of historical fiction. And you have characters, including the Teddy Roosevelt pre-presidency, and another very famous magician who will remain nameless because he shows up toward the end of the book. And it's great. It really is such a fantastic read. I blew through it in, you know, just a couple hours when I first got my hands on it, which is very rare for me because I have a very low attention span. But it's great. And it's only a buck, folks. The Chronological Man, The Martian Emperor, available right now on the Nook Store, the Amazon Kindle Store, and Apple's iBooks. Go snag it there,
not
folks.
Yet, but soon.
Oh, iBooks is coming soon. Sorry. And if you're listening to it, amzn.to/mainmars, MayneMars. And if you've already listened to it or read it, then review it, please, because it helps us. Remember, you got to be part of the cause here, people. The more we get up on these lists, the more people read it, the more people dig it, and the more independent authors like Andrew Main. There's a lot of people talking about, and we talked about it last week, the Louis C.K. thing. You know, listen, that's great. And Louis C.K. is probably my favorite comedian. But he's Louis C.K., man. He's had HBO specials. He's got television specials. The real foot soldiers of making your living online through selling your own work and putting the blood, sweat, and tears that you need to connect with an audience and really have an awesome, awesome time doing it is guys like Andrew selling these books. So hit them up, leave a review, and the audiobook will be coming soon because I'm going to record it.
Any minute now.
Now, could you imagine me trying to say that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Only, right. Only with more.
Well, right. It could be a conversation.
Four syllable.
Like
words.
It doesn't just have to me being, you know, the carnival barker. You can say, like, oh, well, I was thinking about this, and I really like these kind of books, and that's why I was inspired to write this kind of book.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you, just part of what reason I wanted to do this is I love historical fiction, and I love science fiction, and I like hard science fiction, and there is a conceit within the stories, the Smith stories, and that is trying to tell stories that have these sort of high-tech gadgets within a period of time. Everything that I have in there that he may use is based upon existing technologies or patents or things I found about. So that was sort of
awesome.
Instead of giving him like these weird, you know, 20th-century contrivances. And I don't necessarily explicitly explain it, but that was sort of one of the – not that it has anything to do with the storytelling, but just sort of a fun little element. If you come across like, how does he have this? It's like, nope, I found a patent from 1865.
So
this
you're not,
a real
you're,
thing.
You're not pulling like a, you know, Will Smith Wild Wild West where like, I don't know, it's a big old robot, but steam comes out of it. Like you actually found historical precedent for everything that's in there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And yeah. Sometimes like I have him hacking the telegraph system and explaining how that would work in that period of time briefly. Don't worry.
Awesome.
And how you would do keyword searches on a telegraph system.
Yes, he basically pulls Google alerts from a telegraph system, yeah. And that's in like the first
really
five
cool.
pages.
It's that awesome. Is awesome.
Now, yeah. How is the internet?
Oh yeah.
Email?
By the way, Bonnie's grandmother, at 90 years old, asked us, and quite poignantly, like leaning over, like in the middle of a family get together. It's Thanksgiving, and she's like, "Bonnie, come over here." She's like, "Nah, how
does this look?" tit high to you.
How is email different from a telegram? And Bonnie, like, could not answer. She was just like, well, it's pretty much the same, Grandma. I'm not going to lie.
And now that you can do searches on telegrams, there you have
it. That's right.
Yeah. Real quick, the plot of the book. So it begins where the last book ended for Smith. And then the Emperor of Mars comes down to Earth and ransoms all the world's government for untold
or so
something.
We're led to believe.
Or is he?
Yes.
I tell you, I'm so stoked, dude.
AMZN.to/MAYNEMARS. And while you're at it, if you have one of those darn new Kindle Fires or one of those other fantastic contraptions, why don't you go pick up all the rest of Andrew's book? They're like The Grendel Shadow, Public Enemy Zero, and Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist. All a buck each.
Real quick.
You can go to andrewmainbooks.com. I have a mailing list, by the way. If you want to sign up for it, we're going to start sending short stories to. And you can go to andrewmainbooks.com and sign up right there for the mailing list to find out all the latest fun information.
Hey, real quick, our daughter, 7 years old, got a Kindle for Christmas. And she's already reading her favorite stories on there. And awesome. It occurred to me,
and
like,
she's
this
already complaining about the user interface.
No. And to be honest, it's like, you know, for what it is, I mean, you know, for $79, it's yeah. still a marvel. It's as magical as the iPhone was. But it's like, this is it. This is how she will consume books for the rest of her lives. And, you know, occasionally she'll get a physical book and it'll be a curiosity and delightful for what it is. But like, this is it. This is her experience. And at the age of 7, and then I think of a daughter who's 4 years old, she'll never know anything different.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think it's going to be the difference between going to the movies and watching TV, you know, like there's always going to be things that are going to be better Kindle reading or, right. or things that you prefer to read on a Kindle. There's going to be things you prefer to read in a physical book. And sometimes things aren't going to get published as physical books just because it's not cost effective.
Right.
You know,
that's true.
Well, she just carried Harry Potter back and forth to school. That huge.
Well, oh, and that was
book,
the funny part, too,
you know?
is like the idea was like, you know, she's a kid going to elementary school. And it's like, well, do we really want her taking a, you know, a Kindle to and from school? But I pointed out, it's like, look, all her books are stored in the cloud. And at some point we'd rather, let's say we buy her 20 books at $10 each. We'd rather have the physical Kindle get stolen than lose the books that are in the cloud. Like, what really matters are the books and the ideas in there.
Yeah.
This is true.
I agree.
And you can
very, it's a very strange thing to think about. You know, it's one of those things we always knew we would have that, and now we're at that point where we have them. I read half and half, half on my Kindle and my iPad, and half still print books. I'm still a guy. I still like to collect books. I got next episode. I'll show you one of my favorite picks, which I couldn't imagine not having in a print version. But some stuff, like the stuff I write, I can release it for 99 cents because of digital format.
Yeah,
I'm too busy washing dishes and picking up guinea pig poo to have books any other way but in my ear holes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, that's the only way I can't. I have there's an anxiety that's born from not doing homework when I was in school that I don't like to I get very anxious reading things when I should be doing other things. Like, I always feel like I'm wasting time. And so now it's audiobooks have completely erased. That's like the only way I can listen to anything. But that's the only way I can listen to Andrew's books. I have to record myself reading them.
Yes.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see some sort of the audiobook. Some sort of, like, obviously you can play them with your phones, your Androids, whatever, but there is something to the idea of, like, you know, it's neat about the Nook. Like, even like I got a couple of the Kindles to play with. There's like, even like the entry level Kindle will play audio through there. But there's something to the idea of, are we going to be moving away to interfaces that are just purely not move away, but also have interfaces that are purely audio only?
Yeah. And I agree that it's not going to be move away. It will be the emergence of a different option, because there's so
many
situations.
You just plug something into the corner of your room and it could be sound projected or whatever, or you walk into your car and the cloud devices become so invisible that.
Right.
I want to have an ambient sound machine that just plays nothing but a constant loop of Roman brothel. And it's just the sounds of a Roman brothel at all times in my room.
Is that relaxing?
I want
just the clang of bronze and erotic moans and spilled wine.
Okay.
I want an Ambien machine that just, you know, is just loopy people confessing things.
Is it a machine that calls me at 4 o'clock in the morning and then forgets that he talked to me the next day?
Exactly. Oh,
you know, I had that once and I turned it down. I said, no, never again in my bed.
Ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. I got to say, that's been pretty weird.
Sponsor to buy your listener sponsorship spot, saying whatever.